My Key Kickarts, Auckland's comprehensive art show, brought to you every Sunday night here at Planet FM 104.6 or live stream planetaudio.org.nz. Call Richard Green Tenor, your host for the next 90 minutes. We'll be discussing some great stuff in the studio today. In fact, you know, I've got a little bit of a joke to start. Georgia, my co-host, is here with me. See if you can get it. What do you get if you cross two authors, a musician, and two actors?
Kick
cuts. Whoa! Oh. Nice. Now,
good joke.
I walked all the way up. I walked here and I was walking going, you know, I've got to do something a little bit different for the show tonight, so I thought I'd tell a joke. It wasn't a really good one, though,
next
was
week
it?
You can do a poem. You
I could.
A song.
I could do a, what's it called?
Haiku.
Haiku.
Yeah.
I have to work out what they are first before
it's
I do
just
it.
Five syllables. Okay. I write haikus all day, every day.
It's can you write me a haiku for next week?
I can write you a haiku for now. I'll write you one by the end of the show.
You're on. Done. There's a pen just there. You can do that. Pass it to me. Welcome back to you.
Thanks.
Another show together. That's two in a row.
Woohoo.
You won't be here next week, though, will you?
I'm not. I am on site setting up Farrah's Festival. And then the next weekend, I am at Farrah's Festival.
What is Farrah's? Is that where they're selling food?
No, Farrah's with a PH.
Oh,
not for
like,
Aries with an F.
Right.
Yeah.
It's quite considerably confusing, actually.
It is. No, this is the Childish Gambino Festival that is being held out where they hold Split. But the whole thing is very secret, hush-hush. You don't know what the... You know that he's part of the lineup, but you don't know who else
who is
in the lineup. Childish Gambino.
I thought it was a secret. He just told us.
No, that's not a secret, though.
It's not.
Because it's his festival. Well, I think...
Does he actually own it or something? Is he guided?
Yeah, it's like it's his vision. It's his thing. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. Hope I get to meet him. I think I will.
Wow.
I'm going to say, yo.
Well, that would be a good way to start a conversation with him.
Yeah. Yeah, good.
Do you think you lead on from that to something else or just sit with your yo?
I'll read the room.
Okay.
I don't know. I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, well, I'd be interested in a review of that, actually. That would be really great.
Yeah, cool.
And speaking of reviews, I'm going to do it. Well, actually, I'm not going to do a review, but I'm going to talk about... I had the privilege, absolute privilege, of going to Q Theatre last night and seeing Trinity Roots, after 20 years, rock out True, their first album.
Nice.
Live. And
loved it? Because you must have had high expectations going into that.
Huge.
Sorry, I won't... You've got your review coming up, so yeah. I won't ask
it's
you.
It's not really a review, it's a conversation.
It's a, whoa, that was amazing.
It was.
Cool.
It was. Speaking of amazing, I'm going to leap straight into our guests.
Do it.
Okay. And first of all, amazing, Rob, welcome to the studio. And I say amazing because the book you've written that you come here to talk about is about Ōrākei Mount Cook climbing.
That's right.
You climb. You climb up those rock faces through that snow.
Yeah, kia ora, Richard.
Kia ora.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure.
You're welcome.
Well, I've done some of the routes in the book, enough to, you know, be familiar enough with the area so that if people are telling me information, I can tell whether it's bogus or genuine.
Nice.
But there's a few routes in here. I don't think any individual's done the majority of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it an ambition to knock them all off?
No.
Bucket list?
No.
Too much?
There's a lot of exploring yet to do in the area, a lot of new routes awaiting. That's a bit more appealing than the ones that I've already written about.
Okay, yeah. So there's a book. Oh, we're already getting on to book two, George.
Yeah.
Well, book one makes it pretty apparent where the gaps are.
Right.
Before, no one really knew what was, you know, in some areas what was done and what wasn't, and now we've got some lines, and there's big gaps between the lines. So,
nice.
Exciting times.
Looking forward to hearing about that process, because 5 years, I believe, in the writing.
That's right.
It's a long time, or is it a long time? Lisa, welcome. Mm-hmm. The author of Grandzilla.
Yeah.
5 years, is that a long time to write a book, do you think?
Gosh, no.
No?
Yeah.
How long's Grandzilla been in the pipeline?
About 2.5 years.
Yeah,
2.5 to 3 years, yeah.
That's your third book?
It is my third book, yeah.
Your other two are
They were set in Antarctica, where I worked for several years.
Wow.
Yeah.
In Antarctica?
Yeah.
It's quite cold down there, isn't it?
Yeah, very cold. But but it's so dry that you get used to it.
What were you doing in Antarctica?
Oh, different stuff. Nothing amazing. I did winter over one year in the science lab, and it's probably the stupidest job I've ever had, was counting test tubes outside in the freezing cold in the dark in a trailer.
Okay.
Yeah.
For any reason or just to pass the time?
Well, it was my job. Someone had to do it. And it was me.
Oh, wow. Is this in the spare time, is where you've got time to write and research books?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because there's not like a social life really in Antarctica, is there? You can't go out to town for dinner and...
No, you can't. You can't go to the mall. Yeah. No, none of that. No.
Listen to music?
Yeah. Well, they do. Lots of musicians there. You can go to yoga class.
Okay.
Lots of cool stuff going on.
There you go, yeah. Gretel. There's a potential future job for you counting test tubes while writing your first album. Gretel, welcome.
Yes.
runner-up in the National Smoke-Free Rock Quest. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Privileged to have you in the studio. We're going to hear one of your songs a bit later. Are you Auckland-based?
Yes, I am.
You are? So, yep. And envisage a vision of becoming a rock star in the future?
Oh, my gosh. It's a dream.
Yeah? Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to hear a little bit about your journey into music as well tonight. And then some people are coming to the end of part of their journey. Mm. Graduates of the Unitech acting program? Degree?
Bachelor's degree. That's the one.
Screen and something? Stage acting?
Stage and screen.
It's a long, long name.
Long name? Yeah. Let's hear it all the way.
It's the Bachelor of Performing and Screen Arts, acting for screen and theatre.
Wow, you're going to have like it can't no longer be an A3 certificate. It's going to have to be like an A5. No, like an A1 or something, isn't it?
Poster.
To get a poster?
Yeah, we get one, yeah.
Well, actors would appreciate their name on a poster anyway, wouldn't they?
Of course.
So you could have, say the title again for me, Benny?
Bachelor of Performing and Screen Arts, acting for screen and theatre.
Starring Benny.
Yes.
See, that's what you could have.
I'd love that.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the studio. And you've got a production, Oren, coming up. Now? It's on?
Yeah, it's currently happening.
It's opened on the 9th?
Opened on the 9th. Yep. We've had two shows so far, six more to go, Monday through to Saturday.
Yes. Looking at each other for confirmation. They're actors, not marketing people. We've got to understand that.
Although, always looking for work, though.
Yeah.
There's any.
In marketing?
Yes. Anything, really.
Okay. That's a story for actors. I hear that from actors. Same with musicians, too.
Yeah.
You have to just find that work somehow, doing anything, marketing, singing, dancing.
Take what you can.
Teaching, doing the bloody radio show. Hey, Georgia.
Yeah.
Organising rock quests.
It's not a bloody radio show.
Oh, no.
It's a bloody good radio show.
Oh, that's what I meant to say, organising a bloody good radio show. Yeah, 6 years. 6 years. 6 years.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
It is a long time.
I was a mere child when we started. A mere child. How long have you been climbing for, Rob? Were you a mere child when you started?
In uni, I think.
Yeah, so a mere child, yeah?
Yeah, something like that.
What got you involved?
In climbing?
Yeah.
In high school, I'd always read books about, you know, Himalayan adventures and Ed Hillary's books and all that kind of stuff. So, first year of uni, that's the beauty of the club scene, is you can learn how to do things like that pretty cheaply.
So it's quite good to go clubbing at university.
Exactly.
And choosing, well, it's quite good, eh? And choosing the right club that suits you. Were you into tramping and stuff before that?
That's right. It was the tramping club that teaches you how to, you know, gives you all the skills to travel in snow and ice.
Yeah.
There was a rock climbing club, but they weren't too adventurous. It was the tramping club that really got out there.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
changed now.
Yeah.
A couple others and I were pretty keen to make the Rock and Alpine Club an Alpine Club. But now both clubs are, you know, sharing the duties of teaching people how to get into the mountains. But that's a great space for people to learn how to get into it, because professional instruction courses are pretty expensive.
Yeah.
Which uni did you go to?
Oh, that was at Auckland Uni. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. But all the unis around the country offer similar things.
Mm.
And New Zealand Alpine Club, who funded this book that I did the book for, they do a lot of good club instruction courses too. Don't forget that.
And so are they national based?
They are.
And they work through the universities, or
no? So after I left university, I was just New Zealand Alpine Club. They're a totally separate thing.
Right.
But they do plenty of instruction courses, and yeah.
So are you a writer? Is that you, what you do? Is there...
I think I got asked to do this book because I'd written a couple of pretty enthusiastic, you know, journal articles and magazine articles about some trips I'd done. And I was always really curious about the people who'd been there, you know, in the past. I like going to pretty off the beaten track sort of places. Some people
like Palmerston North.
Yeah, for example.
Palmerston.
Probably not as remote as that, but right. Places like, you know, the head of the Karangarua and the Landsborough and the Douglas, you know, right. These sort of places.
Yeah.
And back in the 30s and 50s, you know, a lot of people ventured in there, and I was really fascinated by those stories. But they're not very frequently visited these days. I don't know why. But I'd always been interested in having a kind of historical element to my articles, and I think they were just interested in... they thought, hey, this guy likes his history. He can do some research. We'll get him to do our book.
And, so you were commissioned?
Well, kind of. Is that what you say when you... Don't get
asked to write a book.
Don't get paid.
Oh.
No. I shouldn't say that. I've really enjoyed doing it.
Yeah. Welcome to the world of the arts.
Yeah.
That's it. Sure.
Publishing's hard, though, isn't it, Lisa? I mean, you'd know that with having two books published. To get your books out there is not that easy.
No, it's not. You know, in these days when there's fewer and fewer, like, publishing houses and consolidations and things like that. I mean, online world is great, too. So, yeah. But there's also lots of options how people can publish, like, through online, or if you want to do print like I did, because I just love real books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got given a Kindle for my birthday this year. I've read one book on it. I haven't actually got any more books on it to go because I've got a pile of actual real books by my bed, and I prefer to pick them up and read them.
I agree. Yeah. I think there's something about having a physical book and then you know where you are at in the story and then finishing it and just putting it away and knowing that you can move on to the next book and it's different size and different paper texture. I don't know, I'm a big bookworm. I totally agree. I don't think I could go technology.
It's a tough situation because sustainability-wise, you know, the production of books.
Yeah.
This is using a lot of materials, this thing.
It is.
But I totally agree as well that there's nothing like the tactile nature of real pages.
And you could argue that it takes a lot of resources to make a Kindle as well.
And the battery, disposing of the batteries. Do they have batteries? They're charged by USB, aren't they?
Yeah, and then upgrade to the next one. Here's the next one. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my daughter's using a Kobo that my son discarded that he got in 2008.
What's
a Kobo's like another Kindle, but it's another brand.
Oh, is it the Amazon one?
Kindle's the Amazon, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
Kobo's like got its own separate thing, I think. But it's got no backlight or anything on it. It's black and white. It's really basic. But she still flicks through it because it's got lots of books on it. So sustainability-wise, maybe, you know. I don't know.
I read on my phone.
If you recycle them.
I read on my phone. I love it.
Do you?
Yeah, I don't read books anymore. Well, I don't read physical books anymore. And because it means that I don't have to carry around a book. So wherever I am, I can just read. It's great. I thoroughly recommend it. Yeah.
That's your two cents.
Just in case you were wondering.
What George thought.
How I read.
Thank you. Gretel, are you a big reader?
Yeah, kind of. I prefer, like Georgia, on the phone or laptop. But I actually got a book voucher from my school this year, and I had to actually go to a library and pick a book. And I was, like, looking through all of the books, and I was like, but on my phone I can just look up anything. I only had, like, a limited amount, although I did find a Lily Allen book, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get that.
Lily Allen is an author, or
She's a musician.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. I've got people shaking their heads at me, like, Richard, do you not know who Lily Allen is?
That's so true, though. That somebody can recommend a book to you, and you can just buy it right there on the spot.
Mm. On the phone.
Yeah.
I think the thing with the phone, it comes back to the tactile thing that you were saying, Benny, and the smell of a book too.
Yeah.
And an old book. You talk about sustainability. If you go to the I'm going to ignore that. An old bookstore. And the smell of all the old books is just, there's something magical about it that you can't. If they can release an app, a reading app, that emits a smell of old musty paper, then I'm sold.
That's our multi-million-dollar idea right there.
There's another one. We always rack up, but we never do anything about them. So,
well, people have been trying to invent a television that emits smells for years. So once they get that, hopefully they'll...
Well, it never worked in the movies, did it? They had those films that, for a while, that was a fad, like 3D with sensors and
it's like
movement and
movies or something. Yeah,
yeah.
Bring out the bad smells.
Yeah,
and make people leave. It's a bit too.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. I don't want to smell rotten flesh or anything in a zombie movie. I just don't.
Vomit.
No, no. Fried green tomatoes. What's your preference as an author, Lisa? Do you like want to see your books on paper, or would you like?
Oh, I want readers to read them however they
like.
They love, yeah.
How do you publish on paper? Do you go through? Are there many publishers in New Zealand?
Yeah, there are some. I self-published this book because it's set in the States. I tried to get a literary agent in the States, and no one was interested. I contacted like 70. You know, I wanted to be very thorough. And so I thought, okay, I'll publish it myself. So that's what I've done.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Did that take a lot of energy to do that?
Yeah, it did a bit. Yeah. Yeah, but I enjoy it. I love putting books together. So, I mean, because I just love books.
So publishing it yourself, what does that actually mean? Is that you have to find an editor to edit it?
Yeah. Yeah, work with an editor and proofreaders and, you know, get your friends to read it and... I heard that actual publishing houses for novels, they have like 3 proofreaders. And I heard for like medical textbooks, it's some outrageous number, like 15. So I wanted to make sure I had plenty of proofreaders and, you know, just so it could look as good as it could look.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then did the layout design, and I have a wonderful friend, graphic designer, Tatiana Tavares, and she helped me make sure the book cover was beautiful, and there you go.
Because that's a big selling point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Going back to your point, Benny, about the actual book. Yeah. The book cover can be... You can look at a book cover and go, well...
You judge a book by its cover.
You do, don't you?
You do, yeah.
You shouldn't, though.
Yeah.
How many people have heard that? Don't judge a book by its cover, Georgia.
Okay.
How's that hookoo going?
It's going.
Okay, good. I'm looking forward to having it published by the end of the show.
And can I just say that Rob's book, because he has it right here, it has a beautiful cover.
Yeah, it's stunning. Mm. But actually, though,
I was lucky enough to work with some pretty amazing photographers from around New Zealand. That's a photo by Mark Watson, who's contributed a couple dozen beautiful shots to this book.
And what is it? What's the cover?
That's two climbers approaching the summit of Aoraki. So it's taken from Aoraki looking towards Horokua, Mount Tasman.
Wow.
On a beautiful day.
We have such a beautiful country, don't we?
Yeah.
Such a beautiful country. And the photo on the back as well is equally stunning. Is that sunrise or sunset?
That must be sunrise, I think, given that aspect. That's another of Mark's.
Wow.
Thank you, Mark, if you're listening.
Thank you, Mark, if you're listening. What a great, great thing. I... not a big climber. I have this thing about heights.
That's
so
fine.
Yeah.
A lot of climbers do.
Yeah. Oh, do they?
Yeah, it keeps them alive.
Oh, okay. I suppose it would, because it'd be pretty risky, wouldn't it? Didn't we actually lost a couple of guides just recently?
We have, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It's been a bad couple of weeks.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, it's a risky hobby, isn't it? So having a good guidebook that's clear would be helpful.
I mean, I've tried to, you know, I've tried to describe routes in a way that it's easier for people getting into climbing. It's easier for them to judge what might be appropriate for their skill level. And there's a new grading system here which makes it really clearly differentiated between those easier grades. So it should be... but you're right, there's a lot of... there's some luck and a lot of judgment involved, but there's always going to be an element of luck, unfortunately. It can be risky. But you can reduce it with good decisions if you learn how to do it.
Good decisions. Was it a good decision to go and study acting, talking about getting money and stuff and jobs?
I guess we'll find out next year when we enter the big world.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So what was your motivation? Start with you, Oren.
Well, it would go back to, like, high school. I mean, even before then, I've always been into performing, no matter what it is. I'm a musician as well, a dancer. I mean, there was 6-year-old me busking on the streets with my uncle, dancing with a stereo one day, and we made money from it. So it kind of made me realize, like, I mean, hey, this is really fun, and I'm getting paid for this. I mean, it's like $20, but it's
when you're six,
when I'm six as well, that's amazing.
Mm. Is your uncle a performer?
Well, he's kind of my biggest inspiration. Because when I was younger, I saw him in high school performing a musical. And I was like, wow, he's up there on the stage. I'm like, I could do that. And so in high school, I took drama. I took music, picked up every instrument I could see. And then eventually, like, my passion grew stronger and stronger. Then I finished high school and I went to Hagley Theatre Company in Christchurch, 2-year certificate. And
so is that just I've heard of this before. Does that coincide with high school?
No,
so you do it's a graduate program.
There is a Hagley High School as but that's more of like a it's separate. But
It's Hagley. It's like Hagley High School, and then
it's on the same
within
campus.
The same campus as Hagley Theatre Company.
Okay,
run by Cameron Maddox. It's amazing for anyone that's just trying to kind of understand if acting's for them. You kind of get a concept that like it's not going to be. Like money wise it's not going to be great, but the passion will be there for you, and you'll love it because you're doing it. You get up on stage, you do performances, you sing songs, you do dances. They've got great tutors that come in for 2 years, they take care of you, and that just helped me further realize that acting's what I want to do. And so I took the step further. I went to university, I studied it for 3 years, which is coming to an end now. And oh boy, I'm realizing what I've gotten myself into. Yeah. But I'm gonna push as hard as I can to make this dream of mine come true.
Mm. Sounds like you've worked pretty hard so far.
Yeah,
actually. So that would be 5 years of study altogether, wouldn't it?
Mm. It would be with like just dedicated acting study, really. Yeah, and they say with studying acting, it can take at least 8 years. To at least become an actor, because you've got to teach yourself. Like I will have to teach myself once I leave. I'm not finished with my learning yet, really. And I think that's just going to be the thing about it, is I'm constantly teaching myself about acting. And when the university have taught you how to teach yourself, and so it's a constant growth of learning. Once I'm gone. From there.
Do you ever stop learning though?
No, you never stop learning.
Richard, how did you find that as an actor?
Find what?
Learning, like in the early stages.
Well, I didn't go to university.
Yeah.
I was at the days when you didn't even have drama at school.
What?
So you couldn't do drama at school. You had to just sort of, there were school productions and things, and that's kind of what you did. But mainly my training was in community theatre. So just, you know, doing musicals. I'm not a fan. And and then about 13, I discovered Shakespeare. I got involved in it. I was in a production of Measure for Measure and went, oh, my gosh, real drama. And never really looked back from that. And it was just learning. You always learn, you know, and you learn from other actors, and you learn if you're directing other people, you learn from them. You should do anyway. You should always be open to learn. So because things change, techniques change. I think the style of theatre has changed incredibly over the years, especially the way people approach it as directors, who were quite... The idea used to be that you'd break an actor down to try and build them up again, and you'd call them all sorts of obscenities and things and treat them really poorly, and then that was the way of making them a great actor. I'm not sure that worked for me at all, but that wasn't really my approach. But it's things have changed over the years. I think they do in any craft. The music industry's changed, publishing's changed. They do. You just got to keep up with it.
Yeah.
Mm. So, yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it did.
Just felt like a guest on Kick-Ass here for a second. Gosh. Gosh. And, Benny, you...
yes, me.
There's a question about getting involved in it and making that choice. Why did you make that choice?
Okay. So, I kind of fell in love with acting when I was 12. It's a very, very sad story where I played woman number one in a school production. I didn't have a name or a line. It was just woman number one. But I fell in love with it from there on, and then did high school drama. My teacher was like, you have something. And I was like, oh, No one's ever said that to me before. And
are you Auckland based?
Christchurch.
Oh, you're both from Christchurch.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm one of the few people who didn't go to Hagley.
Okay.
So I graduated high school and took 3 years off, trying to decide what it is I wanted to do. Didn't want to go to university, didn't want to study, and I just had no idea what I was doing. And then all of a sudden, one day, randomly Googled Unitech and realised I had a drama course. And, yeah, applied. I only applied for Unitech. I didn't even know about Toi Fakati. I just only applied here and got in, and it's been the biggest 3 years of my life. But, yeah, I know that this is what I want to do, because acting, you can tell stories that people don't talk about.
Mm.
You can be another person and live through their experiences and grow yourself through what they go through. And you get the chance to bring joy to people and to make them think. And that's something that's pretty powerful, to be able to stand in front of someone telling a story that actually can change them and change their perspective and changes you in the process as well. So, yeah, I've fallen in love with acting, and I just want to take it as far as I can. I don't want to live life with regrets or be like, what if? And that was what brought me here and what's going to keep me going until eventually it doesn't work anymore. That's basically it.
Wow. Goodness.
Yeah.
The journey is ahead. And you haven't even left high school yet, Gretel.
Oh, well...
Or have you?
I just finished high school.
Oh, actually, you did? Yeah. Like this last week?
Yeah. I actually have, like, my last exam in, like, a couple of weeks. So it's going to be great.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm going off to uni next year to study jazz.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm super excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think because a lot of my friends that also do music... I've met them through, like, Rock Quest and also jazz-related stuff. And we're all, like, I'm finding out, like, these people are also doing, like, uni and stuff like that, and all jazz and stuff. And we're all, like, coming together, and I'm super excited. It's just like, yes.
Jazz is an unusual choice, I would suggest, given that jazz isn't really the most popular... genre of music that you could choose. Why have you chosen jazz?
Well, I was in all of the, well, not all of the jazz combos, but I was in jazz combo at school, and I don't know, I've always personally loved jazz myself. I feel like it's just such a big genre. There's so much to it, and I don't know, it's the one that I feel like it speaks to me the most. I just, yeah.
Has that influenced the track that you had in the Smoke-Free Rock Quest?
That's
quite hard to say, Georgia. Work on the title. Smoke-Free Rock Quest.
I like the title.
Okay.
Yeah, it has. I've actually got, like, a lot of inspirations for that track. A lot of electronica, jazz, just... other pop and R&B, stuff like that, yeah.
I think it would be an appropriate time to listen to it, actually.
Let's do it.
Mm. This is called Catch Me If You Can. Mm. Can you talk a little bit about what it's... Is there anything that motivated you? Is it about anything particular, or is it just experimental, or is it a story of lost love or gained hope, or, you know?
Well, I started off with the beat. So I kind of just... When I write songs, I start off writing the instrumental for it, and then the melody kind of comes from the feeling of the song already. So then I just, like, feel the music, and then I sing whatever I think is appropriate and what I feel from the music. So Catch Me If You Can, for me, is quite a cheeky song. So, overall, it's just quite cheeky and fun, and yeah.
Cheeky and fun. It's a bit like you, Georgia.
Thanks.
Yeah, there we go.
Aww.
Hey, can you just tell us, is there Smoke-Free Rock Quest songs are available for people to listen to?
So, this is Georgia. I work for Smoke-Free Rock Quest. So that's why I'm speaking to this. Best job in the world. So the Smoke Free Rock Quest tracks, there is 7 of them available from 10 of the national finalists. There are 3 still to come around the corner. They're just still getting recorded at Roundhead, actually, this week. 7 of them are available on SoundCloud. People can find them through our Facebook page, which is just Smoke Free Rock Quest. Or if you just type into Google or into SoundCloud, Smoke Free Rock Quest, it'll come up. And they're incredible. But everything.
Both of us have been like guests tonight on the show. It's been quite cool.
Yeah, it is cool because we do work in the arts community.
I know. Catch me if you can. Gretel. Is that your stage name, Gretel?
Yeah.
Okay. Very talented.
Thank you.
That's great. I was saying in the break, it just sounds to me like very Kimbra-like. I'm not comparing, you know, like comparing, I'm saying you've got your own style, but it's got that really nice melody, strong melody, and you've got a beautiful voice as well. It's really cool.
Thank you.
You play all of that, right?
Yeah.
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 So that's what, like a pad? What are they called?
Yeah. So I've got a MIDI keyboard, which is a keyboard, but you can program it to do anything. If you've got the right software, of course. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I use a software called Logic, so I can like record everything through an interface. And yeah, so just like all the drums. I use a real bass though, because I play bass guitar as well. But
it's a cool instrument to play.
Oh yeah, it is.
Rocking it out live, eh?
Yeah.
Just going to pull out my bass.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super fun instrument to play. But yeah, so all of the drums, all of the synths and keys, they're all on my MIDI keyboard. So yeah, I basically do it all like that.
It's interesting because we had someone on the show last week who was a musician talking about the democratization of the arts through technology, in the sense that you no longer have to rely on to spend $150 an hour at a studio to record an album. You can actually set up, if you've got the right software and a Mac, you can actually set up in your bedroom and record a reasonable album. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I'm actually doing quite a bit of that now.
Yeah.
I'm like making quite a bit of music lately, well, all this year. But yeah, and it's all through my Mac, and it's like quite decent. Like I can get quite a good sound out of it, and yeah, it's a lot easier now.
Oren, if you talk about being a musician, what kind of music do you dabble in?
Quite similar, actually. I've got my own MIDI keyboard at home, and I do run through Logic as well. But I've only just started teaching myself because it's so complex. I mean, like doing everything through Logic and never being taught through a degree. There's a lot of YouTube tutorials involved.
YouTube, the way of the future.
Oh, yeah, you learn everything from there.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, yeah. But I would like... Everything is done through the MIDI keyboard for me. Other than that, I've got my own... my flat. We're all musicians. And so we'll have jam nights and record that through the computer. And then I'll tweak it on Logic as well. And it's amazing what you can do through the technology nowadays on a laptop through the use of recording programs, because you can get some amazing quality for less effort, I guess you can say. Because the way it's coming out, it's making it so much easier for anybody to make music. You just pick up a keyboard. You can play one note at a time if you like. You just need to keep recording it over and over, and then make it work and sound nice together, and then bam, you've got a song.
It's not that easy, though, is it?
Do
you think people still need talent to make music?
He's incredibly modest, but he is actually a really good musician.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it makes it sound like anyone, like me, I learnt the violin. Not very well, to my dad's horror. But anyone could pick up technology and write a song, even if they have no musical talent.
Yeah.
Do you think that's the case?
If they've got the dedication and they've got the want to make music and the passion, I think they can do it. I think it's very possible. I mean, like I said, you can just play one note at a time and take it very easy, but there's programs out there that will help you tell you which chord would sound nice with what you've actually currently got, which I'm kind of discovering. There's all these kind of supportive programs, and you can, that helps you kind of create, because, you know, every artist struggles. I struggle a lot with making music. You get on stumps and you kind of have to take a break. But then you realise there's new programs that you can actually, that kind of inspires you again to work on that song. Yeah, I'd just say it's a, you know, there's so much out there. So if you keep looking for it, it's possible for anybody, I'd say.
Technology doesn't really help writers, though, does it? I mean, you get writer's block. You can't sort of play one word over and over again and see what comes out of it.
I mean, I'm of the generation still that I find it so much easier. If I'm at a loss and I've just got a blank page in front of me, it's so much easier to have a physical blank page and a pen in my hand than a blank computer screen. I don't know why, but it's so much easier to start writing by hand.
Is that how you write the book, or was it?
I often would, you know, print off, you know, very, very early drafts and just go off somewhere with a hard copy and
make notes
and make notes. But often there was so much research in the library and stuff, looking through, you know, some of those old books with the smell that you were talking about earlier. I had the privilege of looking through hundreds of those.
Wow.
So often it was just practical. But I don't know what mentally it is about the process of writing by hand. Maybe it's just because I'm the generation who did that in school. I just find it easier.
No, I agree. Yeah. Like, I find sometimes, this isn't the same, but like writing essays, I find it easier to... If I'm struck on my computer, I'll get a blank piece of paper and just start doodling or like writing thoughts down, and then eventually that kind of translates into paper, but I think it's some kind of brain hand thing that happens that makes it work better. Anyway, I just wanted to back you up on that one.
Yeah.
That was good. That was good backing up there all the way. Thanks, mate. Lisa, how do you use technology to your full advantage?
Love my laptop.
Yeah.
I always write on my laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, can't do it on pen and paper anymore. You know, I used to when I was young, before laptops, before computers even. I guess I've just outed myself as old. But
mature, I think, is the word we like to use.
Thank you. Yes, mature. But yeah, I remember that, getting that first computer and switching over and then not looking back. So yeah, happy with my Mac laptop.
Ever used a typewriter?
Oh, let me tell you, 12 years old, manual typewriter.
Yeah.
And my little hands, and you know, your pinkies aren't strong enough to do it, but yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, graduated, got to use the electric typewriter, and yeah, all over. Took typing class in high school.
The first play I ever wrote was on an old typewriter. It was very satisfying. At 3 a.m, tapping away at the keys, my father wasn't so impressed. But there's something about, again, it's that kind of tactile thing of typing away, hearing a click, 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 ching, click, 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 click,
yeah,
ching.
Exactly.
It annoys everyone else in the house. But it's, you know, and you just rip it out and put it down and put another piece of paper in. Something really real about it.
Mm. You know, I just made me think about, you know, when they invented typewriters, they didn't think women could, you know, have the skill or the intelligence to be typewriters.
Oh,
so men were typewriters.
Yeah.
Not women.
And look at what happened there.
Yeah.
They pretty much pegged women to be in the typing pool from that point. And, you know, Pittman's and typing schools and all those sorts of things, they targeted as women. That's really... So the keyboards... then, because they're quite hard to type, aren't they? They weren't designed to be easy, were they, those old typewriters, if you think about them?
Yeah, another story, because, you know, when they invented it, it had a different, the keys were different, but people could type faster than the manual, the mechanics could work, so they redid the, you know, to get the QWERTY that we're used to now. So they had to redo it. Slow people down, yeah.
To slow people down?
Yeah, that's a typewriter fun fact for you.
Yep. Why would you want to slow people down?
Well, because the machines, the original typewriters
couldn't
handle it.
The keys get stuck. Do you remember the keys used to get stuck on the rolling thing?
Yeah.
Gosh, it brings back memories. I was only 2 at the time, but, you know, typing class. Do you write by hand with your music? Because I suppose if it's electronic, you wouldn't be writing notes out, would you?
Well, on Logic, you can put notes in, like, by each thing. But, I guess through school, they did make you do it on paper quite a lot.
Mm.
But,
you don't have to worry about that anymore.
No. But they did also make us use some software called Sibelius, which after, like, year 10, they just got us to do Sibelius because it was all quicker on computer and stuff. Yeah. Not so much on paper. Yeah.
Can you convert? So if you wanted to, you've written all the different parts and put it all together electronically. If you wanted to get a live band to play it, is there a way that it will convert your sounds into quavers and semi-quavers and, you know, as sheet music?
Yes, you can export it into a different file and then make it sheet music.
Mm-hmm.
It probably won't be the exact thing, but you can change it on Logic. And it's I had to do that this year for my songwriting internal, and it takes so long. But, it's pretty good. And then you can just give it to the people and they can play it.
Play it.
Yeah.
So you can share your music that way.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Technology has changed so much, hasn't it? Does technology affect you as actors, though? I mean, apart from maybe film cameras being different or...
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, back a few years ago, once you graduated drama school, you'd have to join a theatre or be in TV commercials or something like that. Whereas now we're encouraged to go out and make our own stuff.
Mm.
We now have the ability and the tools and the capability to make our own short films and our own YouTube content and things like that. So it's kind of, technology has changed how content is produced. Now we're more into web series, we're more into like little clips, little snippets, what are they called?
Stings.
So like, yeah, your acting has gone more online, and so you have to create content for people on Facebook and social media now, rather than simply a theatre or a TV commercial or a movie.
So is there more of a kind of directing component to courses nowadays than there used to be?
Sometimes it's more like a self-creation kind of aspect of it.
And so this work that you're doing is all devised, isn't it?
Yes.
Because devising seems to be the method du jour of theatre at the moment for graduates. Your own work.
Yeah, and that was the point of this project. It was to give us all a chance to create a piece of theatre that we can tour, or we can take somewhere, we can expand it, take it, because currently they're 30 minutes, but we can expand them to an hour or an hour and a half.
An hour's good.
I'm still new to this. It's been a very interesting process, in the sense that now I definitely know how I want to go about creating work and what works for me, and it's been more of like a self-devised process, which is very interesting, because I'm used to, you know, in high school drama where you get scripts given to you and you have to play a character and that's it, but the power kind of goes into our own hands, which is very exciting.
I'll jump on. It's been an opportunity for us actors to really delve into what we've wanted to do in terms of our own creation. For example, I wanted to work on comedy when there's other people working on abstract theatre, and it's amazing the difference we've got. Like, I've known these guys for 3 years, and the work they've produced is so connected to who they are as a person. It's amazing, and it's quite, you feel very proud of the class, because they've made such strong pieces that really reflect on what they want to do, and I think everyone should feel very proud of what they've made. Add that on.
How many in the class?
22.
Yeah. Did it start out as 22?
It started out as 26.
26. Yeah, so you lost a few along the way.
Yeah, that happens, you know, people, and it's a brave move as well to realise that it's not the thing for you. But we've lost people along the years.
It was all first year that they all dropped out.
It's a hard thing, isn't it, to do?
Definitely.
Putting yourself out there and
it's a big risk. It is all one big risk. Yeah.
Yeah. And the class before us, no one left, and the class after us, no one's left. So
that's incredible.
Yeah.
There was 26 people that graduated last year, and 26 that are still there this year.
I just studied in a class something totally different, but literally 2/3 of the class dropped out. There was like 8 of us in the end. It was pretty sad.
High pressure.
Yeah.
High pressure job then, maybe. Is that the difference?
What did you study?
I studied counselling at Unitech. Narrative practice. No, it was just a really terrible course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show, it's like, actually, if it's legit, then people stick around.
Yeah. The stuff they teach you is incredible. Even if it doesn't teach you to be a better actor, it teaches you to be a better person. And that's probably the most important thing. Yeah,
you two are so infinitely positive. It's so good. No matter what's coming out of this course that you're on, you both have a very positive attitude, which is fantastic to hear.
I want to do the course now. It sounds great.
There's another. You can take your counselling skills into the class and make sure no one leaves.
Yeah. Well, to be honest,
or 2/3 will leave because you're there. And maybe you.
Exactly.
Ouch.
I'm just going to ask, Rob, what do you actually, so you're not a full-time writer, what do you do to survive?
Oh, we don't need to go there.
Do you have a day job?
I'm an engineer.
You're an engineer?
Yes.
You're an engineer who writes books about mountain climbing. So what kind of engineering do you do?
Geotechnical. Dirt.
So they're related, in a sense.
Sure. I mean, I studied geology as well. That's the type of engineering I wanted to get into. And the geology in the mountains is kind of fascinating to me as well.
Yeah. Are they tied up?
There's a small part of the book there.
Is it coincidence, or are they that you're interested
in? Yeah, it's coincidental.
Yeah?
I think.
Yeah. How did you find time to write this book?
Well, it was tough. So when I say 5 years, you know, there were a couple of hiatuses.
Yes.
Hiatus.
That's a good word. Hiatus.
Hiatus.
You know, just because life had to happen, you know, and we just needed, my partner Claire and I just needed a break from the book for a while. So, you know, we went travelling and moved to a new city and bought a house and all that kind of stuff. And so nothing was happening on the book for a while. So there's probably 3.5 years of work. But I didn't sleep much is the answer. You know, before the book was finished, I didn't have much spare time and I wasn't sleeping enough. Now I'm just don't have any spare time, but I'm sleeping. Well, that's which is a nice change.
Yeah, sleep is good. Studies show that, you know, getting a good amount of sleep has infinitely good health benefits. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah.
Don't skint on sleep.
I believe it.
Mm-hmm. It's like torture if you don't have enough. What about you, Lisa? What's your...
My day job?
Yeah.
I work at the university with a research team, TRI, and we do palliative care and end-of-life health research for people who are like 85 and older, because that's the fastest growing demographic in the world.
Wow.
Yeah, and so we don't know what's it like to be 85, and you know, because we're living longer and you're dying, and people will have more things wrong with them, like, you know, it could be diabetes, lung problems, whatever.
Arthritis.
Yeah, so, yeah. And you're palliative, you know, you're on your way out, and so how can we best take care of people? And I'm not talking about medical so much as just, like, in community or how we can help families or just that kind of stuff.
Because as the population gets older and older, we're going to have to start solving those problems.
Working with it better, yeah.
And your first two books were around those subjects? Is that right?
No, just they were both set in Antarctica. One was a mystery, online book, but it was a murder mystery.
In Antarctica?
Yeah.
There can't be that many suspects.
I know. They're not going anywhere. That's
no, that's
for sure.
Right. Yeah,
yeah, they're stuck there.
Was it the penguins?
Yeah. Always the penguins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they look like the butler, because that famous one, the butler did it. The butler did it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly, yeah.
That's right. The penguin did it. Mm-hmm. Yes. It was Dr. Smith in the laboratory with the...
Penguin.
No, not the penguin. With the...
candlestick.
What did you call it? The thing that you were looking, counting...
Test tubes, of course.
Yeah, there you go.
Got
you
back.
Got you. Yeah, the test tubes. I still want to know what you were counting in the test tubes. Was there something in them, or were you just counting test tubes?
No, and I really, and two, we were counting syringes. It was just kind of, because they do experiments down there. You know, there's one of those tabloid newspapers. They wrote an article about how there were wild feral cats in Antarctica. And, of course, they're not, but... So we had that, and we wondered if maybe they were off doing experiments on these feral cats.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
That's a story.
Yeah.
There's a book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Climbing in Antarctica, Rob? Are there good climbs in Antarctica, or is it too cold?
Oh, apparently.
Yeah? Too cold for you?
Sounds freezing.
Does it? Well, you live in Wellington, though, don't you? So that's kind of close.
Yeah, it's the worst weather in New Zealand.
Yeah. It is. I have to agree with you on that one. It's one of the best cities in New Zealand with the worst weather. It's a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
Would you climb in Antarctica?
Would I?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't like the cold.
Yeah, fair enough.
I like the mountains in summer.
Oh, you do know? You?
Yeah. When it's a bit warmer.
Yeah.
You know,
are they safer in the summer? Or the same risks? Or different risks, but same risk level?
Very different risks.
Yeah.
But I would say generally a little bit safer in summer. Yeah.
Because New Zealand, people who go are tramping would know that you can go, even in the middle of summer, you can go walking in the mountains and then suddenly get caught in extreme weather without, you know... any warning.
I guess it's easier to get fooled by the weather in summer because you might think it's always going to be nice and warm. At least in winter, you know, okay, at least it's going to be a little bit cold.
Yeah, a little bit cold. What's the lowest temperature that gets into Ōrākei?
Oh, probably be something like, I don't know, minus 30 or something in winter up high. It'd been not quite as bad as it gets in Canada, but or Antarctica for sure.
Minus 30?
Yeah, in the village, maybe minus 15.
Why would
like
you?
That.
Why would you?
Why would you?
Why would you? who likes the cold?
No.
I'm not going to try.
You lived in Antarctica over the winter. You've got to at least enjoy a little bit.
I'm not going to try and defend it or explain it here.
Yeah.
Those who've been there understand the pull.
Yeah. Mm. I imagine it must be incredibly exciting, though, achieving a climb, adrenaline. And what do you do with...
I've always said that if you're experiencing adrenaline on a climb, something's probably wrong.
Oh, really? You know,
it should be a pretty controlled process.
But the excitement of reaching the summit?
Oh, yeah. There's, you could say, euphoria, I guess.
For sure. You seem very calm. We've got calm and positive. I feel if something went wrong in the studio, George, we'd be looked after pretty well.
Yeah.
I think Rob would show us a nice, safe way out while keeping calm. Naran and Benny would keep us nice...
And positive.
And positive about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we'd have Gretel singing quietly in the background. While Lisa plots who she's going to kill on the way out.
Exactly. For her next book.
For her next book.
Yes, she'll be so happy. Yeah. A plot right here.
Now, speaking of so happy, I'm gonna play a song now. I'm going to pick up on something that Gretel said about you play the bass.
Yeah.
I've had a favourite track for years and years and years and years, and for the first time ever in my life I saw it live last night. And I first heard it in about 2002, and it was on an album called Eco Green, I think it was, maybe. And it was about... it was used by the Green Party, I think, in their 2002 election campaign, when they first came to prominence. And I never realised that it actually was... I never really thought about it. I always listened to it. Never realised it was actually just... a bass and a vocalist. And hearing it, seeing it last night, it lost no magic being live. You know how some live performances, it loses the magic of this? Actually, I think, actually gained. In fact, talking about the Trinity Roots True concert last night, and they played the whole album, I'd have to say, and two people who I've never met before and will never see probably again agreed with me as I walked out and said, that is the best damn concert I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
And two people went, hell yes.
That
was incredible.
Saying something.
It is. It was just amazing. These guys and jazz, the jazz influence runs all the way through Trinity Roots' music. But they were just... positive, and they talked about their music and how the songs came about. They recorded it in a wool shed, when they first recorded it in a wool shed on a farm, and threw it together. And they played a couple of songs that were left off the album as well, which I wish they'd been on because they're really good. Got an encore, got two standing ovations, took it all very much in their stride. But they've been going 20 years, and they broke up for a while, but they produced their last album's just as awesome as their first album. So, and that's the song I'm talking about. It's called Beautiful People, and it's just, and you're probably aware, have you heard the track before?
Yeah.
And it just, it is, it's beautiful. And now, it's been a while since I've actually played out of there, George. It's lying in, isn't it? Just checking with my co-host there.
This is so cool. You're on a year old school iPod.
I know. This is so I discovered.
And retro.
I'm being retro. It's actually not retro. It's my turntables retro with all my vinyl. And the other thing was I cannot get. So they printed True on vinyl limited release. And I have been trying for months to get a copy. And it's just, you just can't get it. And last night he goes, good luck to anyone here got vinyl. Yay. Hard luck to you other guys because we're not printing anymore.
No. Why do you think that is?
It's a collector's piece. You know, it's their first album. It's worth...
Good on them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's worth something.
But they're not going to make any more...
No, but it's value. I think the value on the music. They value their music. And I think that's what I appreciated watching them perform last night because... I can't remember his name's gone in my head, the lead singer. I'll look it up in a minute. I'm doing the songs on. But the lead singer, he's so lost in his music. You can tell when he's singing that he's just there. You know, he's just loves it. 20 years later, he still loves it as much as when he recorded it 20 years ago. They all did. It's just amazing. So I'm going to play this song, give our guests a little break, because you're talking all so well, I have to say. So Trinity Roots, off the album True, with their first album released nearly 20 years ago. Here's the song Beautiful People. Thank you.
living their lives. Today, beautiful people, open your eyes. And when you do, won't you tell me what you see? And when you do, won't you tell me what you see? And when you do, won't you tell me what you see? And when you do, won't you tell me what you see? Mother, call to your children and bring them inside. Father, teach well your children, fill them with pride. And when you do, won't you tell me what you see? And when you do, won't you tell me what you see? And when you do, won't you tell me what you see? And when you do, won't you tell me what you see? What they see is how we be reflected in society. Take responsibility, don't miss the opportunity. 'Cause what they see is how we be reflected in society. Take responsibility, don't miss the opportunity. People are living their lives. Today, beautiful people, open your eyes. And when you do, won't you tell me what you see? And when you do, won't you tell me what you see? Won't you tell me what you see? And when you do, won't you tell me what you see?
Straight in on top of that. I have to give it a pause. That's just an amazing piece. I just personally love that piece of music. I think it resonates. And seeing it live, you know, just it was just incredible. Just incredible. And he's not actually even the lead singer. He's the guy who plays the bass, he backs up. But the two of them were the original Trinity Roots. And they had not a ukulele.
Everyone loves a ukulele.
Banjo. They and made the banjo look cool.
Banjo is cool, man.
Banjo, yeah, that's another instrument I tried to learn.
The only instrument that's not cool is the recorder.
Oh, yeah. It's the only one I can play.
Oh, no.
I just remember you go, B-A-G, B-A-G.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? And the spit that came out the end.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? And it would drip onto
Remember that.
You don't?
Oh, no.
I was in like the orchestra in year four and you played it and like eventually if you played it too much the spit would just drip out onto your clothes.
You'll record it in the orchestra?
Yeah, when I was like year four.
Oh, okay.
Like a recorder orchestra. It was probably the most hideous thing to listen to, but it was so great.
What's the worst thing you've done performance wise?
Just what's the worst thing you've done?
Yeah, we'll get to that later. What's the worst thing you've done performance wise? What the thing you've regretted the most, or the thing that gives you the worst memory that you don't want to share with anyone, but you're now going to share with all the listeners on Kick Arts?
Maybe I've repressed it because I can't remember anything.
Okay.
I think Warren's got something though.
I've got one because I was in an orchestra. Through high school, when we travelled the world, And we were in
what school did you go to? Hagley?
Linwood College.
Okay.
Before it kind of took away its budget for music and drama. So I got in there just in time.
But, why did they do that?
You know, they mustn't seem like it's important. And they just think that well, they just don't think it's important, and they think they should put money into English and maths.
Let's come back to that conversation. You finish your story.
Well, we got to travel the world. I was in the percussion. I got to play the triangle. Mm-hmm. Lucky me. we were in the Westminster Abbey, which is in England, London. And
in it.
Yeah. And we were performing one song, and I had the duty of playing the crash cymbals. And the one thing I regret is, because you've percussion, you need to be specifically on time. You need to be hitting the notes right on time, and I came in so off. I hit the notes at the wrong spot. The whole orchestra was quiet, and I just crashed the cymbals as loud as I could because I thought he was starting. And so he was like, you know, because the conductor will raise his hands, and I thought that was like, okay, go, boom, crash the cymbals, and all of a sudden, like, just like.
Oh, that's a little so frustration. Good.
That's amazing.
But if you're going to do it, you might as well do it in Westminster Abbey, I see.
Yeah.
Can I talk about the triangle?
Mm.
Going back to Trinity Roots, the triangle was a feature of one of the tracks. I can't remember what track it is, but it was so important to the timing, and they finished on it so beautifully with the ping of the triangle, and he made a big deal about it.
Yeah,
and don't underestimate the power of a triangle.
I love the triangle.
It's great.
Dance Macabre. It's one of the like an orchestral song. That the triangle in that song is phenomenal, and I always love playing the triangle in that song. I didn't regret it one bit.
Yeah. I love the triangle. I can play that. arts and education.
Mm.
Oh goodness!
So taking it's a big subject. We won't cover it all off in the time we've got, but. Taking budgets away from music and drama, why would a school do that? So how do you think, lots of questions here, but the arts in education are important?
Hell yeah. I think that's...
What do they add?
I don't know about other people, but for me it brings out my creative side. It allows me to express myself in ways that sometimes language can't. And I think that everyone has a side of themselves that is artistic and needs to be expressed that way. And like there's studies, sometimes I research online, but there are studies that show that arts and drama and dance and physical movement and all that kind of thing stuff can help people to process their emotions and process past traumas and past situations like that. And if you take that away, how are people going to process what's going on in their lives? They're not, and then it's going to build up and build up and build up and just explode one day. I think arts are just so much more important than anyone gives it credit for. And someone put a post up on Facebook a while ago saying, if you think arts are underrated, here's everything that art does. I mean, there's advertising, that's art. There's, Netflix. There's the movies you go see. There are jingles that you listen to. There's books music on the radio, books that you read. Those are all created from creative people through arts.
It wouldn't be Spotify, like SoundCloud.
No.
Nothing.
Wouldn't be even just something as simple as a busker on the side of the street. Who hasn't walked past one and had a smile on their face when you hear a song playing in the square or something? It removes a certain element of humanity if you get rid of the arts. I'm very passionate about this.
You are. Yeah. That's great.
I think it's to do with, like, you know, drama, performing, seeing art. There's something to do with healing. And the human, we're so drawn to it because we can relate to it emotionally. And for that, it helps us get over trauma when we listen to a song that we love or we see a play that helps us forget about reality. It's a way to escape our stress of daily lives, and without it, like Benny said, our problems would just stick with us, and it would grow, and we would explode in a way that is just so uncontrolled. And I think art is just a way to control and feel connected with our humanity.
Attempt to understand the ununderstandable.
The ununderstandable.
Is that even a word? I don't know.
It is now. Hey, look, if Shakespeare can do it, so can you.
True.
Just make out that word and own it. That's
I'll
what
trademark
I
it right now.
Absolutely. Write a play with a whole lot of words you've just made up yourself. 400 years, people will still be reading it.
Mm. I like your thinking. I like it.
Mm. Now, as one who's just leaving school, who's, you know, final exam coming up, do you think the arts have a place in education?
Yes, definitely.
Do you think everyone should do arts in education? Like, it should be a compulsory part of a curriculum?
I don't know about compulsory. I mean, yes, coming from somebody who, like, the arts is literally all I do. In school, I actually only take double music, dance, drum, and media studies. So, I mean, I can't. I don't know. But there are some people that really are just on the opposite side, and they really don't see the
value.
Importance and value of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I respect how they feel, but like most of the time, I don't know if that's how everybody sees us. So I don't know. I feel like it shouldn't be compulsory, but it should definitely be, like,
there.
Mm-hmm. And everybody should be, like, giving everybody a little bit of a push to get people into that sort of thing. Maybe for, like, the first few years, make it compulsory, but, like, after that, then they can decide whether it's something they want to do or not. Yeah, I feel like that. Just like with maths and science, for me, it was compulsory for me to do that. But then afterwards I was like, no. Yeah, I feel like it should be also compulsory for music and drama and dance and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because people don't hold equal academic value to the subjects, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that? From a generation perhaps where there weren't the opportunities to study those things at school as subjects so much, were there? Were you?
Yeah, there were, maybe not as much like now. I don't know. But I agree with all that y'all are saying. I mean, it's our humanity that we're losing when we're not, when they're not valued as vital and important, because they are. I mean, and even talking about it as they is like, I'm like, sounds like I'm commodifying it as a thing when it is our humanity. The arts are our humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so not to have these outlets to express them, like in schools, is to cut off a part of our humanity.
And by cutting funding to those departments, you're saying you can't do this, it's not valued, it's not worth a career. But it is a career, because you guys are heading towards it right now, aren't you?
Yeah.
Good luck.
Exactly.
Yeah. He says quietly under his breath. What about you, Rob? You're quiet on the subject. Because you're a geotechnical engineering person.
Man, I've just stopped thinking about anything guidebook or engineering related. I've been enthralled by this.
Yeah.
Hearing from how articulate these responses have been. I totally agree.
Yeah. Did you do any arts at school? Did you have the opportunity to do arts, or did you dabble or do a school musical?
Well, I think it was just called art, which was essentially painting and sketching and that kind of, up until I was maybe 16, which I enjoyed a lot.
Yeah.
But,
writing,
I wasn't very good. I mean, I think I can find a way to even make this relate. I think a lot of climbers might not be good at the more traditional sorts of art, but I think there's a kind of physical art that a lot of them do in the routes they choose to establish in the mountains. Like they'll look at a piece of mountainside or geology and find a line that's aesthetically appealing that nobody might have climbed before, and think that would be good style to climb that line. That's a beautiful feature. I want to climb that.
Mm.
And the way that they might choose to climb it could be there's lots of different ways you can do a new route on a mountain, and it's kind of the ambition of a lot of climbers to do things in good style, you know, lightweight, just ground up. So, and I think back when I was researching this book, in the in the kind of late 60s, early 70s, there were people were kind of... there was a lot of shit going on in the world then, and the mountains were where a lot of people found kind of freedom of expression, where they couldn't find it elsewhere in society. Yeah, and it's been fascinating looking through the surge of climbing that got done over about a five-year period from about 68 to 73. It's incredible in New Zealand. And a lot of it very hard and done in fantastic style. And so it was almost another type of art form, I reckon.
I agree. Joe, I about expressing yourself, I read an article, I wish I'd remember where I read it, it was in New Zealand in the 1930s where women who were still, you know, second-class citizens, essentially, there were women tramping groups, and they would go off tramping as a way of getting away from the patriarchal society and going away for a week with just other women. And it was an accepted way for them to go off.
I'm so glad you've mentioned this.
Oh, good.
I mean, that's something I really wanted to bring to the fore in the history section in the start of this book was... the achievements of women climbers from kind of the 1800s all the way through to now. But, yeah, especially in that era you mentioned in the 1920s and 30s when tramping clubs were getting established all around the country, that was kind of the first time that a lot of women could climb as, you know, independently. Prior to that, you know, the perceived role of women in society was not to go out and get dirty or sunburned or whatever. They were supposed to have a very domestic role in the house. And over the turn of the century and around World War I, the women who were successful in the mountains were generally the more affluent ones with, you know, inherited wealth who could afford to hire a guide because they had to have some kind of chaperone. But, yes, those clubs that you mentioned starting in, like, the 20s and 30s, there was a girl named Betsy Blunden from Dunedin.
What a great name.
1928, yeah. She was 17, she thought, stuff society's expectations. I don't want to be bound to a desk job in Dunedin. And she moved to Mount Cook and became a glacier guide.
Wow.
And, 17.
Yeah, about a month before her 18th birthday. Yep.
Wow.
And by the 30s, she was guiding as an equal next to men and was leading some big climbs and was on a lot of first ascents. She was, I reckon, New Zealand's first truly independent woman climber, and that was around 1930. There's so many fascinating stories like this that I've managed to find.
And they run through your book?
Yeah, there's a few of them in there. Yep.
Great.
I've tried to put as many of those little anecdotes as I can. Because that's more fascinating to me than, you know, just where the lines are now. Each one of those lines, each one of these thousand routes or so in the book is a little story that somebody's done. But, yeah, there's some that are more exceptional than others, and I've tried to highlight those.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a great story. That's a really good story. That's a film right there.
I'll be busy.
I was thinking that.
Yeah. That's a film about her right there.
I'll play
so
it.
Many biographies that need to be written about some of these women back then.
Yeah. And now what? They can be prime minister and have a baby. You know?
Pretty cool.
And sort of it leads on from those early pioneer women's. Women's. Gosh, that's good grammar, isn't it? Women's.
Yeah, way of the future.
Women's.
I don't know.
Now I'm talking about my poor language. But again, I could write a play about it.
You could.
In 400 years, people won't be reading it. Rock. Your sweatshirt has a rock on it with an asterisk. I'm curious as what that is.
Well, that flies in the face of kind of the topic we were just talking about, because the subtitle here is Keeping Mankind Sane for Hundreds of Years.
Oh, okay.
We should just cover that up.
Yeah, keeping humankind
exactly.
sane. Yeah. As not as in
well,
rock
maybe,
music.
Maybe women just require more than rock to stay sane. I don't
know. Yeah. That's possible.
That's not too bad.
Now, speaking of rock, you should tell us. So, it's getting into shameless promotion time now. So, how can people? Well, first of all, you've got a launch Monday night.
Tomorrow night,
which is the 12th of November. I was going to say the 13th, but it's the 12th of November at the Dominion...
Yeah, the Dominion Bar in Mount Eden.
Mount Eden.
7:30.
Is it invite only?
No, anyone can come.
Anyone can come along?
Yep. Okay. The books will be for... So the Auckland section of the Alpine Club has their monthly meeting there, and that's tomorrow night.
Are you hijacking the meeting?
The fifth of five, yeah, essentially.
Nice.
The fifth of five launches for the book. We've already had four.
Yeah.
In the South Island and Wellington.
Yep. Left us till last. Lucky last in Auckland, eh? Always the way. Mm-hmm. Always the way. Yeah.
And if you can't make that, they're available. Go to alpineclub.org.nz and you can order yourself a copy.
Nice. And the title again?
Aoraki Taipotini.
Taipotini.
So that's for Aoraki Mount Cook and Westland Taipotini National Parks.
Nice. I like that you've used Te Reo there in bold as the title. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
And speaking of rock, Rock Quest runner up. Awesome. What a great track. What's next for you? You've got a gig coming up, have you?
Yes. I'm going to be playing at Devonstock on December 9th.
And what's Devonstock?
It's a little festival that Devonport Youth Forum put on every year.
Oh, like Woodstock, except in Devonport.
Yeah.
I just clicked. What a great name, Devonstock.
Yeah, and it's just a little, little nice festival. Skill is going to be playing. They're my favorite Auckland band. I'm so like stoked to be playing with them, honestly.
Do you know, in a couple of years people are going to be going, oh my god, I'm playing with Gretel next week, I'm so excited.
Oh, that'd be a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's happening, and I'm pretty sure it's free. Just people come along, sit down with their picnic.
It's nice,
real nice. And yeah,
Devonstock. Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with the jazz. And I'm sure we're going to have you back in the studio over the years when, as you release albums and do concerts. And when you're famous, don't forget us little people.
I
Lisa, your book.
Yes, Grandzilla. And the tagline for it is, not every grandma is a sweet little old lady.
And that sounds great.
Yeah. So, yeah, so it's a story. It's kind of an intergenerational story with Grandzilla. She's 75, and her granddaughter, Tessa, gets dumped on her for the summer, and Tessa is not happy about it. And so it's their story, and then it also mixes in. We go back to Berlin, West Berlin, in the 1967-68, when everything just exploded.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-war protests, stuff like that going on. And it's available, soon be an ebook, but if people love their print copies, it's available in bookstores around New Zealand.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Cool. And if you had a online Facebook page or anything?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I do. Or website, lisa.org/Grandzilla.
Grandzilla. I don't think you could forget Grandzilla, eh, really. Is that one of your, George's switched off there? She's asleep in the corner. Grandzilla.
Yeah.
Do you think you could write a who in the next minute? Grandzilla?
Yep.
Okay, on to it. And the Unitech Year 3 graduate students, your production is called what?
Finn.
Finn. Oh, like, is it Finnish?
Yes,
oh, with
it.
A question mark.
He got it.
Yeah.
He got
well,
it.
I watch a lot of foreign movies, and it always comes something, Finn. It's like, oh,
yeah.
Man, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not like shark's fin soup or anything like that.
No, nothing like that.
No.
That was a thought for a while there, but you got it on one, so that's all good.
Nice. I do have some intelligence, despite what people say. So they can see it Tuesday to Saturday?
Tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow. Monday to Saturday.
Monday to Saturday. Yep.
At the theatre at
Unitech Theatre.
Gate 1.
Gate 1.
Yep.
Starts at 7 p.m.
Tickets available from?
iTicket. And there's also an event on Facebook as well.
Okay.
You can search up.
Go to iTicket and then just in the search bar type in Unitech. It should be the first one that pops up.
Nice.
Yep.
And you're excited. And what's your particular, are you in the same production?
No.
We're in different ones. So I'm in one of the comedies. I don't want to give you too much because I can't really spoil anything about what I'm involved in. And there's also a drama, medieval one.
Mm.
Yes.
And I'm in, it's got a very long name. It's called The Immeasurable Distance Between Grief, You and Us. And it's a, how do I explain it? It's more like a visual, sensory, poetic, physical dance, singing. We write our own songs for it, and that kind of stuff. So ours is very poetic and very different to everyone else's.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the one that I'm involved in is called The Barber of Arendar. It's one of Shakespeare's lost plays.
So oh, really?
If you want to see it, do come along.
I don't believe you for a second.
Well, you just have to
I actually saw his last play in Wellington quite a few years ago. Do you remember that one of them came out? A research group at a university in England had found bits and pieces of a manuscript, and they'd computer generated by programming all his plays in and then having it fill in what they thought would be the gaps.
Wow.
And the play was terrible. The acting was terrible, but the play itself, it didn't really go. It kind of was like Macbeth meets King Lear meets Midsummer Night's Dream. Like, ooh, what the hell are you thinking?
A tragedy and a comedy at the same time.
And a history as well. Yeah. I'm pretty sure there was some history. I really didn't do that well. That's what happens when you use computers to write plays. So now in the background there, I'm playing a little bit of Trinity Roots. It's their song, The Little Things, which... it's a nice way to go out.
Cool. Can I do a plug as well?
You can.
Just before we head off. I'm also a freelance photographer. So if anyone's looking for acting headshots, portraits, I do weddings as well sometimes, and also production stills if you have plays or films. I do pretty much anything for money, to be honest. Let's face it. So my business is called Benny Joy Photography, and I have a website. It's BennyJoyPhotography.com. I also have a Facebook page. You can look on there, and an Instagram as well if you want to see some of the
photos.
Yeah, see some of the images I put out. Yeah,
so that's the way you survive in the arts. You do more than one thing.
I do like five different things, to be honest.
You've got to, otherwise you're just going to be sitting by the phone waiting for someone to give you that part on Jordan Street.
Exactly.
It'll come, Rob. It'll come. Oh, quick, do one before we go.
Haiku. The haiku. Do you want one, two, or three?
Let's do a random computer. Three.
Your best one.
Three.
Into the mic.
Three's all right.
Okay, do two.
I like number one. Okay, I'm going to put number one.
I just should have just said that at the beginning.
Every Sunday night.
Every week I have to work with this.
Hey, I'm doing my haiku. Haiku number one. Every Sunday night we go on the radio 104.6. Get it?
Is that it?
Yeah, that's haiku.
Wow.
You could be a bit more impressed.
Sorry, I just feel really underwhelmed at the moment. But
I've got another one.
Okay, let's do number two.
Okay. It is 8 o'clock. Time to go and kick some arts. Richard's hair is tall.
I like that one better.
Yeah, because it's five syllables and seven and five.
Yeah, I get that. Okay, and the third one?
Number three. Here we celebrate the arts in Aotearoa. Welcome to Kick Arts.
Is it 5, 7, and 5?
Yeah, it should be. I counted it.
Oh, that's pretty impressive. I like that one, too. I actually like that one.
I like how you said, I like that one, too.
I like you, George. I'm going to miss you while you're away doing lots of worky stuff.
I am going to miss you,
but we'll get you
Richard.
Back again, in December. We'll get back before we get into our Christmas shows and things like that. If you're doing anything in the arts around Auckland, all you have to do is get in touch with us, kickarts1@gmail.com. Send us some information. We'll get you on the show. We're not doing event listings. We want to hear about you and what you do and your project, but pretty much, why do you do what you do? Why do you do what you do? Facebook tomorrow. Check it out. We'll be posting the podcast. It'll be available 5 minutes after we go off air tonight. You can download the podcast. If you really enjoyed the show, you can send it to your friends. If you thought it was a load of shit, you can send it to your enemies. I don't care, really. But we've had five amazing guests on. Get out, get those books, listen to those songs, go see those plays, support the arts in Aotearoa, New Zealand. We've got so much talent out here. It is worth fighting for. Education and the arts should go together. I'm just doing that little plug because I think it's really, really important. So I hope you all have a great week, and we'll be back. Well, I'll be back next week. We've got another great lineup of guests. We've got music, we've got theatre, we've got all sorts of things happening, and there's a lot as we ramp into the pre-Christmas season. If you want to do something with your work group, why not take everyone out to go and see a play somewhere or a concert, or and then read a book afterwards when you get home. Pick it off. That's what I'm going to be doing, certainly, and I might just try climbing as well, as a new thing in my life. So keep safe, be good to yourselves, be good to each other, go out there this week and kick some arts.